From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, January 6th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Organizers of a ballot campaign seeking to require Maine voters to present a photo ID before voting submitted their signature petitions today to get their proposal on the November ballot. Supporters argue it's a way to ensure election integrity, but opponents warn that the measure is unnecessary and contains changes that go far beyond requiring a photo ID. Steve Missler has more.
Flanked in the State House Hall of Flags by dozens of volunteers and armed with what they say are more than 170,000 voter signatures, supporters repeatedly describe the voter ID ballot initiative as the will of the people, long blocked by Democratic state lawmakers in Augusta. Republican Representative Laurel Libby of Auburn pointed to signatures collected from nearly 300 municipalities as evidence that support is widespread.
That is a thunderous roar from every corner of our state.
Libby is one of the leaders of Voter ID for Me, a campaign connected to a pair of political action committees that have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to support conservative candidates and causes. The ballot campaign's lead funder is the PAC for Our Future, and so far, that group's lead donor is an organization long associated with Leonard Leo, a conservative activist credited with remaking the U.S. Supreme Court. The voter ID campaign's connections to Leo may ensure that it has more than enough money to convince Maine voters that the proposal is the right one for a state where voter fraud is exceedingly rare. But for now, Libby's pitch centers on the popularity of the concept of showing a photo ID before filling out an election ballot.
36 other states have recognized the importance of strengthening our elections, of protecting the democratic process. And yet Maine lags behind.
According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 36 other states do require voters to present some form of identification before voting. But only 9 of those states have strict photo ID requirements. Maine would become the 10th if this proposal is backed by voters. And if national polling is accurate, there's a good chance that they will. A Gallup poll from October found that 84% of respondents favor photo ID for voting. The campaign has frequently highlighted that number, but opponents of the measure are hoping that its less discussed provisions will give voters pause if it qualifies for the November ballot.
The Citizens Initiative presented to us today has so much more that is really problematic. It is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Democratic Secretary of State Shenna Bellows has long opposed requiring voters to present a photo ID. In her previous role as the director of the ACLU of Maine, she argued that photo ID and other voting restrictions disenfranchise eligible voters and suppress turnout. She says that voter fraud prevention happens at registration, when Mainers have to show proof of identity, and through checks performed by local clerks. And she says this proposal would create a host of new restrictions that go beyond the debate over photo ID. It limits each municipality to a single drop box and replaces election clerks and town officials with collecting those ballots with partisans from the Democratic and Republican Party. It ends a program that allows senior citizens to sign up to receive an absentee ballot automatically before each election. It eliminates student IDs as a valid form of photo identification, and it rolls back the time allowed to request an absentee ballot. Bellows is encouraging voters to take a hard look at those provisions, as well as another that flips the burden of Maine's ballot challenge process from partisan poll watchers to the voter whose eligibility is in question.
Reasonable people may have differing views about the validity of a voter ID being shown on election day. That is an element of this bill, but there are a lot of other provisions in this legislation that may actually undermine election security and voter participation in our state.
The proposal is also drawing opposition from the Maine League of Women Voters, a voting rights organization that has historically opposed photo ID at the polls. Spokesperson Jen Lancaster says the measure purports to fight voter fraud, but reverses efforts to expand voting access.
It would be one of the most restrictive bills across the nation, and it's here in Maine, and they're asking the Maine people to vote on it while misleading and leaving out all these other things that it's going to do, which is roll back absentee voting, things that are very popular with the Maine people.
But supporters counter that photo ID is a common sense reform to the voting process, embraced by Mainers and an overwhelming majority of Americans. They're hoping that sentiment will prevail in November. But first, state election officials will have to validate the campaign's signatures and decide whether it has more than 67,000 to qualify for the fall ballot. They have 30 days to complete that task. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Mainers now have direct access to their vehicle's wireless diagnostic and repair information. Advocates say the state's new right to repair law, passed in 2023, allows car owners to send their information to any independent repair shop rather than being forced to bring their car to the dealership. Tommy Hickey, the director of the Maine Automotive Right to Repair Committee, says Massachusetts is the only other state to have a law like this, which is intended to give power back to consumers.
This is a big win for consumer choice. This is a big win for local business. And this is a great way to keep independent repair shops and car owners alike as the gatekeepers of their own repair information.
Hickey says the diagnostic repair information should be made available through a phone app. And says vehicle owners who were denied direct access to it can seek civil damages of $10,000 or more. The law will only apply to cars sold in Maine after today's date. The head of Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, Heather Johnson, is stepping down at the beginning of March. Johnson was appointed as DECD commissioner in 2019. In a statement, Governor Janet Mills credited Johnson as a driving force behind Maine's economic recovery following the pandemic and for establishing the state's free community college program, expanding broadband, and developing Maine's first strategic economic plan in two decades. A spokesperson for the governor says Johnson is leaving the department to pursue other professional opportunities. The governor may appoint an acting commissioner or nominate a permanent leader to replace Johnson. Any candidate for commissioner must be confirmed by the Maine Senate. A Superior Court judge says the state of Maine is failing to provide, quote, continuous representation to criminal defendants who can't afford an attorney. As Kevin Miller reports, the judge says that is a clear violation of defendants' constitutional rights.
Both the state and federal constitutions guarantee low-income defendants the right to a free attorney. But the number of so-called indigent clients lingering in jails for weeks or months without assigned counsel has grown dramatically in the more than 2 years since the ACLU of Maine first filed its lawsuit against the state. In a partial judgment issued on Friday, Superior Court Justice Michaela Murphy wrote that the Maine Commission on Public Defense Services has taken a, quote, very limited view of what they owe indigent defendants in Maine under the Sixth Amendment. ACLU Chief Counsel Zachary Hyden says the decision clearly establishes that the state is not meeting its obligations.
We're looking forward to the next steps in this case and to a future in which all Mainers are afforded their rights under the Constitution. It's taken years of litigation to get to this point, and we hope that this decision has brought us one step closer to a day when people in Maine are afforded all of their rights, including the right to counsel.
Murphy plans to meet with attorneys from both sides this week to begin talking about potential remedies to the situation. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The Maine Department of Health and Human Services says it will receive $17 million in federal funds over the next decade to improve maternal and newborn health initiatives. State officials say the money comes from a federal initiative designed to boost services for patients enrolled in Medicaid or the Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP. In a statement, DHHS says the first step of the project will involve working with hospitals, health systems, and pregnant people to figure out ways to improve care. The department says it also wants to implement a new payment model for maternity care by 2028. The award comes at a challenging time for maternity care in the state, as hospitals in York, Rumford, Fort Kent, and elsewhere have recently closed their obstetrics units. Conservation groups are using the federal relicensing of a hydropower dam in Brunswick to try to restore migratory fish populations on the Androscoggin River. Brookfield Renewables wants to operate the dam for at least another 30 years, but critics say its current fish passage is ineffective and wants the company to consider alternatives to improve passage. Chip Spies with Free the Andros says the 50-year-old dam still blocks Atlantic salmon, shad, and other fish from traveling the river.
The best solution, frankly, is removal of the dam. But there's other alternatives, and that's what's being considered right now. There could be ways to improve the fishway, to improve attraction to the current fishway. Up and downstream, there could be alternative fishways that are designed.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission recently approved Brookfield's study plan to update the dam license, which expires in 2029. ISO New England is reporting that for the first time in a single year, it has recorded over 100 days in which energy demand actually went down in the middle of the day due to solar use. Molly Enking has more.
In the past year, 106 days were characterized as duck curve days, named after a curve in the energy usage graph that loosely resembles waterfowl in profile. These are times in which energy demand dips in the middle of the day. ISO New England's Mary Kate Colapietro says these instances are a direct result of increased solar usage.
The midday energy demand was lower than it was overnight. And this is happening because of the adoption of what's called behind-the-meter solar, which are these smaller-scale systems that often are on folks' rooftops, or sometimes you'll see them on top of commercial buildings or by parking lots.
Duck days have been on the rise since ISO New England first started tracking them about 6 years ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Maine's housing outlook in the new year. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.